This is Ansel Doing It, a podcast where I, Angelica Cabecerra, and my best friend,
Jackie Garaves,
talk about what it's like to live in the borderlands as queer Latinxes on a budget.
Each week, we'll tackle life as we avoid our dissertations with pop culture and memes. Join us as we figure out how to stay on top of our horoscope, our lives, and our own self-work in these borderlands.
Powered by Echa de Ganas, Tacos, Cochinita Pibil, and Selena.
Hey, friend.
Hey.
How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Good. I'm afraid I over-caffeinated you.
I think so. I don't know. I don't know how I'm feeling right now. I think I got a little too turnt when we went live earlier. And now I have a headache.
No, you gotta save some for the rest of us.
I know. I know. I done fucked up.
Aww. It's also a beautiful day.
It is. It's a really nice day, and you had all your shades closed.
I was just, for some reason, I don't know. I didn't realize how much sunlight happens here.
Well, yeah, because your shades were closed. So how would you know that there's sun if everything was closed?
I don't know why I was on stealth mode. I just was.
Like, who the fuck is she hiding from?
Myself.
Nobody can really look. I mean, if people really tried, they could look in your apartment. But I don't think anybody's trying to look in here.
Yeah, I don't know why I get...
It's not like you're on the first floor.
No, I'm on the second floor, but my apartment faces the street. And I live next to a school, like a high school. Actually, it's a K through 12. It's huge.
Oh, wow.
It has like 10 charter schools in it.
Oh, great.
It's really crowded. So I'm so used to seeing kids outside and things like, there's always people outside, which I love about my street. There's that señora who sells hot Cheetos and Funyuns and all
and
kinds
takis.
Of, and takis and gum. There's a lot of activity outside, so I usually keep them closed. And if not, I keep them kind of diagonal, so I can still get some light, but they don't see.
Right.
Yeah, I'm used to that. I don't know why.
Okay.
I like my privacy.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But thank you for opening my shades today.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a metaphor there for me somewhere.
I'm sure there is.
Thank you for bringing me into the light.
Yeah, of course. As
it's nice
always.
Out here.
Yeah. Per usual. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Today's my day off and I've been home all day, which feels really nice.
Yeah.
I think I shared with you this morning that I actually slept until 8:50 today and
oh,
I feel fabulous.
Look at you sleeping in.
I know it sounds ridiculous to others maybe, but I wake up at 6:30 a.m. every day.
So I was supposed to sleep in today.
What happened?
I turned my alarm off. Usually my partner and I will talk in the morning, like before she walks, like goes into work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we're long distance.
That's so sweet.
And I told Anisha not to call me. And.
That's so sweet. And then I told her not to call me.
I told her, no, because yesterday she woke me up when I was trying to sleep in, but I had not communicated it. So last night I was like, I need to sleep in. Like, I just need extra sleep.
Yeah.
Tell me why I woke up at 6 in the morning and didn't go back to sleep. I couldn't. That was my sleeping in or attempt.
That happens to me so fucking often. Because our bodies are used to it.
Yes. I was just like, what the fuck?
I actually this morning woke up at 6:30, like always. My partner left to work around 7-ish.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe later. And I couldn't fall back asleep until they left.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were making noise and stuff. Like,
right.
Being disruptive.
Yeah.
Out there, they... It's not like they live here or anything, but I couldn't go to sleep. And then I went to sleep and I woke up around 9 and it's that extra hour, dude. Like, it changes everything. Mm-hmm. And also, like, the stress and anxiety of knowing that you're getting up to go do stuff. I think for me, that's more than that's what takes away the sleep from me.
Right.
Like, yeah. And I'm braving, like, public transit. So it's a very specific
mental
space.
Like, fuck men. I was gonna say fuck mental transit.
Transit. I love that. What is mental transit? Is that when you have too many thoughts?
I really don't know, but I'm sure I've experienced it.
Yeah, no, it's a shit show, honestly, like the bus out here, but
No, I grew up taking fucking the metro in LA,
right?
And I'm just like, fuck that.
Yes, hell, it's no. Very frustrating.
No, thank you.
It's mostly just crowded and like full of people that you don't want to be in a bus with. I remember, like, I have a lot of things that I do to make sure that I feel good when I'm riding the bus. Like, I make sure that my bag isn't too heavy, because the worst right. feeling is like having this heavy bag and you're dragging
shit around.
Yeah, so I only pack what I need. I've become very good at that. Like, I pack really light. I make sure my phone's charged and I have a couple podcasts downloaded, ready to go. I bring a book just in case my phone dies. Like, I am ready for like anything. I bring gum. I bring like, you know.
Do you pass out the gum to everybody on the bus? Because
sometimes I want to. Sometimes I want to. No, actually, it keeps me awake.
Yeah.
Because I have this fear of falling asleep and missing my stop because it's happened.
Yeah.
And so usually when I feel myself, the other day I was like nodding off in the bus and I just use gum because the smell or whatever, the chewing keeps me awake.
Right.
This is probably too much information about my bus journey, but I'm good.
I mean, some people might need some tips or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think
I'm sure you're not the only one.
Yeah.
Who takes the bus or the metro.
Anything's bearable as long as you make sure you stay ready, you know? Like,
yeah.
You don't have to not enjoy it. Like, I think sometimes it just sucks and you have to just make sure you get your shit together. That way it doesn't feel so horrible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm good. I'm having a good week. Let me see what's new with me. My Nintendo Switch journey continues.
Oh, yeah. You got it now.
I got it. I've been playing for a few days. I am so happy with it. I have obviously bought the Zelda game and I'm just currently playing it all the time, you know. I'll reward myself with it after working. Like, I'll make sure that it's not interrupting too much of my day. But it's been really nice just to be able to, like, be useful in this world of Zelda.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's a nice escape from reality for sure. It's cute.
That's nice.
Yeah. It really de-stresses me, so.
Oh, that's hilarious. I'm glad you feel useful.
Yeah. Well, I think in my waking life, my real life, like, the reality of it is that a lot of the work that I do is just very slow to change.
Right.
Like, totally. The dissertation's so huge that you can't think of it as getting done right now.
Right.
It's just, like, I need instant gratification more than anything, so. It's been working out. But then that game's also really hard. So,
yeah.
I keep dying.
Don't really know anything about it. So, I'll probably die.
You're just like, you're a knight and you save a princess. And the princess is like...
It sounds like my true life.
Oh, yeah?
This fish. Sounds like my waking life. What are you talking about?
I believed
about?
You for like a quick second. I was not expecting that. I was just like ready to be like, oh, really? Wow. This is why I have trust issues. Yes, it sounds exactly like what's going on right now. The world is burning. There's flames. This is real. It's true.
How about that person? Can we just talk about that person who their last day at Twitter decided to take down 45's Twitter account?
They're a true American hero. No one could be braver. No one deserves a medal more.
Medal of Courage, right there.
I hope that it serves an example to our great nation.
Yo,
that's savage. That's a way to go. That's
somebody I wrote. I think it was my friend. I think it was my friend. I don't know who it was.
Somebody
on one of my social media accounts was like, I bet it was a black woman who did that.
And yes. was telling, so what's new with me? I'll tell you this. So we were looking at Oprah's favorite things.
Oh, okay. Okay. 20,
we're going there.
All right.
So I don't know if people know this, but I...
We also have to talk about the Rihanna song, but
yes,
we'll do that.
After. Rihanna's after this for sure. Just like Black excellence continues.
And Selena. Also,
and Selena. We need
our Latinx excellence.
Oh, I'm excited. So this morning I went onto Amazon and I had the joy of witnessing Oprah's favorite things, 2K17. So I don't know if you knew this. It used to be on her talk show, she used to like...
Give things away.
Yes, give things
away. And you get a new car. And you get a new car.
You get a toaster oven. And you get a cashmere sweater.
There's a toaster oven under your seat. Everybody's seat. Yes.
Like, what kind of seat?
For the children.
Yeah,
if you weren't after the Oxygen Network or whatever.
That's really sad. Or ABC. I think it was on ABC.
Right, that's what I'm saying. After Oxygen, when she was already retired.
Before OWN, if you only think that she's from OWN, the channel, that's really sad.
Right.
No. She was a huge talk show host, and in the show, she would, like, pretty much like Ellen, I think, do this giveaway where...
But I think... Everything Ellen does, she got from Oprah.
Yeah, but the majority, except for the being gay part.
I mean, she's also gay, but she's still in the closet. But yeah.
Jackie thinks that Stedman is like a beard of sorts, or...
He is, and Gail is her girlfriend.
Okay. I support your queer storylines always, but I really
Shut
don't
up.
Know.
Be quiet. Don't talk. If you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything.
In the spirit of Christmas. I don't want to be on the naughty list.
And
like
how
every
come?
Year.
Oh, hey, Gail was on this Amazon. She's in the videos in Amazon. Where's Stedman?
He's just not really like a public.
He's
person.
Not around.
Yeah, he doesn't really.
I don't really think he exists. I mean, I know he's a real person, but I don't think he actually exists in her life.
I always wondered about that because he never got married, which I respect and appreciate.
Right, she better keep hers.
She's keeping her money, but I think also like it's cool that. I like that he's kind of low-key like that, even if they're not, even if she is, like, sleeping with Gail, which, like, everybody would not be surprised.
Right.
But I think it's more like I enjoy a partner who's low-key, too, because it's nice for one person to do their own thing, be very extroverted, and the other person to just kind of chill.
Mm-hmm.
I like that he's not attention-hungry is what I'm saying. I think that's the only person that
you
can be with
Oprah. You think they have a three-way going?
I hope so. I hope everybody's getting their own, you know?
Getting that O.
Wow. Okay. See, what was supposed to be an innocent conversation about Christmas gifts?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Has that turned into a three-way orgasm? Anyway, I was showing Jackie all of the wonderful favorite things that Oprah has this year, and I shared with her how I saw it this morning. So my partner and I were looking at it, and then I was just obsessed with it. There's like a Sonicare toothbrush in it. There's like,
are you getting one?
I'm thinking about it, you know, like
I've been thinking about it too.
Yeah, you know, my toothbrush isn't just doing it anymore. I know this sounds like a commercial where we jump into being sponsored by a toothbrush company, but we're not.
I've been thinking about it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, me too.
My partner has
a fancy one. I saw.
Yeah,
I don't even know what it's
what
called.
What are they called? Mechanical powered toothbrush?
Like a mechanical pencil?
No, it's not. Sorry. Electric.
Yes.
Oh my! I'm not here today. Okay, I'm slowly coming alive.
Thank you.
But yeah, so I've been thinking about getting one, but. I kind of like the one I have, the basic one that I have that doesn't come with any kind of, you know, motorized engine or anything.
Well,
has a lot going on. With
I went through a phase where I thought it was stupid to spend money on toothbrushes. It's still the phase I'm in. Like,
do
I'm
you
very
think so? Like, I think it's important to spend money on your teeth,
no,
my friend.
I do. I think that now what I'm saying is like, that's not something I thought for a long time. Like, I would just go to Target, get a couple of cheap...
Get a regular...
You know, it was more like I never thought... Not that I thought it was a gimmick or anything.
But it was necessary.
Yeah, like, I would always forget to spend more money on that, you know?
Yeah, I don't really know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just thinking about it. I'm like, well, what took me so long? I have no idea. I think I just never really went through with it. Like, and bought something
think,
like that.
You know, I think it's just like when you grow up poor.
It always goes back to this.
When you grow up poor.
We have a poor corner.
And you never even knew those existed.
Right. Yeah. What was the first time you saw an electric toothbrush? I'm serious, dude.
I really don't know.
For me, it was recent.
Yeah, because I'm just like, where would I have seen an electric toothbrush? Like, my mom didn't have one.
Yo, have you seen the ones that, the water flossers?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
That's another
level.
Yes. So, Hey Friend Hey from the Friend Zone podcast recommended one for people. And I was just like, what the fuck is this? And then I went on YouTube and I found videos of people using them.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, how the fuck is water supposed to floss your teeth? I don't get it.
Yeah, I think my sister-in-law has one of these.
Yeah, and they look even fancier than
they have electric. A lot of shit going on.
Yeah, it's like a fucking station and you charge it and it's like...
It has like a water thing. And
The dentist uses it. I'm familiar with the contraption. I just didn't know that you could get one for your own and that it was going to be $200.
So are those? Is that in Oprah's list?
No, it just made me think about it. I'm like, fuck, I'm not even scratching the surface here.
Well, all y'all, dental hygiene is very important.
Very important.
Needless to say that.
Yes. I don't know how we got
it. Protect your smile.
But don't feel
and
bad,
your baby. Yes.
Yo, yes.
Please floss.
Twice a day at least. Brought to you by, I don't know, the Teeth Association of America. But yeah, I guess you could just call it the when you grow up poor moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I never knew that I could afford one, so.
Yeah.
Now we know.
I'm just, you know, glad we were able to afford toothpaste.
That's so real. I still feel guilty buying. This is also another when you grow up poor conversion. Okay. I still feel really guilty buying, like... expensive toothpaste?
I don't. Not anymore.
Well, like, you know, the toothpaste that does everything? The toothpaste that's, like, whitening and all this and all that. Like, it has a shiny package.
It's not
that
man. It's, like,
yeah, and I'm just like...
It's just to take your money from you.
Right. I can't tell if I'm being bamboozled.
I buy that Tom shit from, like, Trader Joe's
or
Whole Foods or whatever.
That one's nice.
That natural shit.
Some of it has flavor to it, which is weird to me.
Yeah, I buy the, like, fluoride-free.
Why is fluoride not a good thing?
I don't know. I forgot.
Okay.
My doctor told me, but...
Damn. I keep buying fluoride. I don't know any better, so...
Yeah.
Let us know, please. Send us some DMs if you know why fluoride is bad.
You could also just Google it.
I could, but... yeah. So can we talk about what's in this favorite things list? Because you were saying, let me look at the under $50.
Yeah, there is an under $50 one because I know Oprah is rich as fuck. She's a billionaire.
My partner also made this comment. He was like, well, when you're Oprah and you have money to waste, I guess you just come up with shit to buy. I can't believe that. People around me are so salty about it.
What the fuck did she put on a favorite list that I can actually afford?
So she put this lunchbox that I thought you would like.
Oh, my God. Let me see. This is ridiculous.
Or awesome.
Now, why would she put this? What, like... Okay, it's $70.
Yes.
For this little shit you can get at Daiso for like $350.
Damn. Is Daiso only a California thing though? Where people would folks know what that is?
I don't know. I don't know. Because
it's like the Japanese 9-cent store.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I've only seen them in LA.
It literally looks like something you get at Daiso.
You know... It's okay. I understand Oprah's not everybody.
Oprah is bougie as fuck. We're not on the set, you know?
Yes, she is. I totally understand that. But some of the things that she recommends are actually really good.
Hmm.
I'll give you some of my favorites, okay? So what I was telling you about, which is the Super Soul Sunday life-changing insights from these conversations. So I love Super Soul Sunday. It's kind of like a spiritual, just like life advice.
It's like sitting with God, aka Oprah, on Sundays.
It's the Lord's Day anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she gathered all of the most insightful comments with Janet Mock, who we mentioned mm-hmm. in the last episode, was part of one of these conversations. Mm-hmm. So it's just like in a little cute book. I think that's a really good gift for somebody. There's also this, I want to get this. It's a herb preserver. So like for your basil, your cilantro, it keeps it alive.
How much is it?
It's about $40.
$40!
And it's sold out, so I can no longer get that.
Oh my god, this bitch. She's so doing too much.
She's doing all of the things, and I love her. She also has a frozen dessert maker, like a sorbet maker. There's a personalized post earring gift set.
What the fuck is that?
Like little like cubic zirconia earrings. Oh,
how much is that?
Let me see.
Little gift set.
48 for okay. 5 pairs of
None
earrings.
None of this is affordable.
I know, I'm trying.
You're not enticing me at all to want to look at this list.
Well, it's not my job to do that. It's right there for you if you want it, but I'm cool with it. I like this. I've always wondered what kind of glasses she wears, like reading glasses.
I'm sure they're not on. I'm sure she does not get them from Amazon.
Yeah, they're called peepers, sunglasses.
How much are those?
Let's see. Doesn't say.
Because they're probably too expensive.
To show people, they're like, we're not going to let them know until.
Right, until they're like.
Oh, they're $22.
Okay, she definitely does not use those then.
Anyway, these are all really interesting things. This is what I was thinking of giving you, which is extra virgin chocolate.
What is that?
It's basically this collaboration between a chocolatier.
Huh?
A chocolate expert.
Uh-huh.
Or maker.
And
an olive oil expert. So they mixed olive oil with chocolate.
Oh, interesting.
Into 4 different kinds. So
three.
It's like a little gift set. Yeah, I don't know. Some of the stuff is like, oh, I could totally give my mom that, you know?
If anybody wants to send me chocolate, please DM me for my address. I will take any and all chocolate donations.
Yeah, you love chocolate, don't you?
I really do.
Like dark chocolate.
I like any chocolate, to be honest.
Oh, that's good.
The only chocolate I don't like is like chocolate with like, you know, like those See's candy chocolates that have like
nuts?
No, I love nuts in my mouth with chocolate. but I don't like the ones that have like the fruit filling. But like chocolate covered things, like chocolate covered like power berries,
like,
I like.
Like a cherry situation.
Yeah, but like liquidy, you know?
Oh, that's gross, yeah.
Or like those ones that have like cognac or something. Like, I don't like the liquidy stuff inside of chocolate.
Is that a weird texture thing for you?
It just doesn't taste good to me. And texture, I get. Well, texture not so much, but more so like flavor. But I love dark chocolate. I love milk chocolate. I love chocolate with nuts. That's my favorite thing. Like almonds.
I love the
peanuts.
Cookies and cream Hershey's. That's my favorite.
You're so fucking basic. Also very good though. I agree. There was a time period where I was only buying that.
Yeah, I love Oreos. So it's just like an Oreo candy bar.
I also love Oreos, yes. Yeah. I just love chocolate in all of its forms.
Can you tell the folks out here what you make with chocolate that drives me crazy?
Yes, drives her crazy in a good way.
Yes, yeah, not like bad.
I have to like ration this bitch. I make, I don't know how long I've been making it for, but I found this really bomb recipe either sometime early this year or sometime last year. But for, I would say maybe for the last year, maybe I've been making this flourless chocolate cake. It's super easy to make.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a few ingredients. It's like
butter.
It's butter.
That's why it tastes so good.
Semi-sweet.
Dark chocolate, I think.
No, it's just semi-sweet chocolate.
Okay.
Chocolate chips, right? Mm-hmm. So semi-sweet chocolate chips, hella butter, an egg or two.
Mm-hmm.
And no, you also need the cacao powder.
Oh, like the Hershey's cacao powder?
No, I don't do Hershey's.
Oh, okay.
I do Ghirardelli's.
Mira.
So I get the Ghirardelli's chocolate chips.
Okay.
And the Ghirardelli's cacao powder.
Cacao.
So you have to melt it.
Did you ever see that Portlandia episode?
No.
Cacao. Okay, then I'll show you later. No. It's all about cacao.
But it's fucking bomb, and it comes out. One thing is, like, I've had flourless chocolate cake, and it's, like, dry as fuck and nasty, and it really has no flavor. But this one...
So much.
Oh, and then on top of all the butter, you put hella brown sugar in it, too.
Mm.
Or sugar. The recipe is sugar, but I put brown sugar.
That tastes better.
I don't do white sugar. You do brown sugar. And it's fucking bomb, and it's super moist. And I can't come around on Helica... with it, because she will fucking steal that shit from me.
Yeah,
she won't leave me any, or anybody else any, as a matter of fact.
So yeah, a bitch can't get enough of flourless chocolate cake. I the first time you made it, I had like half of it, and then you were like, what the fuck?
I know, I was like, I gotta make this bitch her own.
And then you made it again, and you made sure that you gave me a piece. And I remember thinking, like, was she gonna eat that?
And you don't really have a sweet tooth. No. I don't know why you like it so much.
I think that's the funniest part about it. It's like, I don't know if y'all know, but I don't eat fruit.
Yeah.
At all.
But this doesn't have fruit.
No, but what I'm saying is I don't really eat sweet things on a regular basis.
Okay.
Like, I don't really look for them. Whenever I have, like, a sweet craving, it's very small and very, like... you know, once in a while. So, like, when I had this cake, it was like crack.
Yeah.
It was so good.
It was just like, I've never seen her like this.
Never. So, I actually bought all the ingredients to make it.
Did you buy the cacao powder?
I did, but I didn't know that you got the Ghirardelli, so I'm going to have to go get that.
Well, I mean, it might be similar.
I'll try it with that and see how it tastes, but it might not taste the same as yours.
Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, I'm going to eat it anyway, so it
doesn't really
matter. I'm going to eat the shit out of it. I won't even leave my partner any, probably. I'll just make it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you won't.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's just, I can't control myself around this cake. It's so weird.
Is this what love feels like?
Yeah,
that's what it is. That's what not a crack addiction. That's what a sugar addiction feels like.
Okay. Well, now I feel bad about it. It's all good.
Anyway, so before we get into our topic, though, we should talk about the fact that tonight Selena is getting her Hollywood
overdue,
long overdue Hollywood Walk of Fame star of fame. I don't know what to call it.
Star on the Walk of Fame.
Okay, she's getting her star on the Walk of Fame.
Yeah, in a few hours, she will be immortalized. And I can't wait for people to leave roses on the star.
Yes.
I can't wait for people to, like, stay vigil at it. I don't know. I just really like that. And I think it's also, like, you know, to me, I grew up in the 90s and she was such a big deal, you know?
Right.
Like, she was everywhere. Like, she had that Pepsi campaign. I just want her to get
her
star.
She had that Bustikaka.
Bustikaka. Oh, yeah. Yo, she was so big. I remember. What was your first song that you heard from her?
I don't remember, dude. I was so little when she, like...
Mm-hmm.
When she... I mean, I remember her. And I remember that I knew of her before she died. And then I remember how much more I knew about her after, like, the day she was killed. Because we all, like...
The news were, like...
We were all shook.
Yes.
I think everybody felt that.
Yes.
I remember where I was, like, and hearing about it. And I do just remember, like... loving her English songs a lot, right? And then I don't think I appreciated her Spanish songs as much, like, right at the beginning. But I mean, I remember, like, singing, like, falling asleep, or not falling asleep, but like being on my own by myself and like singing her little sad, like, what is that shit, that,
I Dream of You.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Dreaming of You, I think.
Dreaming of You. Mm-hmm. There we go. Dreaming of You, like, thinking
really
about my little heartbreaks and, like, you know, all of that when I was, like, hella young. Like, hella little.
I also have an emo Selena story where actually I only knew her Spanish songs because I was in Mexico.
Right,
this was back when Baby Me was in Mexico. And the first song I heard on Telemundo, because Telemundo would air U.S. shit all the time.
Mm.
Like, Telemundo was more U.S. based or more U.S. focused. And so I remember seeing the music video for No Me Queda Más with the mariachi and everything and that long white dress that she was wearing. It was beautiful. And I couldn't take my eyes off of her. And I was just, like, crying.
Mm.
Mind you, I was always, like, an emotional little kid anyway. But, like, that song, like, I don't know why I felt so connected to her in that moment, but I was obsessed with her after that.
Right.
She was just so sweet and so vulnerable and, like, had such a beautiful voice.
That's awesome.
I miss her.
Yeah, I think we all miss her.
Yeah.
I think we're all trying to keep her alive real hard.
Very hard.
Very hard.
Trying to wear her lipstick.
Yeah.
Trying to keep her on
Everybody dresses up like her every Halloween.
Yes. I love all the Selena costumes every year.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, so.
Everybody trying to keep her alive.
And keeping with, I also wanted to shout out a couple of the comments we got on last week's episode. So last week we talked about Thoughty Body.
Wow. This is what we're doing.
Is that okay?
Yes, you're doing it.
Some of them are about you.
I know, that's why. That's why I made the comment.
So,
I know what you were going to say.
So last week we talked about thotty bodies and unequal relationships, or friendships, I think.
Friendships, yeah.
And so I really loved a couple of the comments y'all left us on the Instagram page. So La Mentira said, I've never seen Pretty Woman either. Solidarity.
Yes, that's right.
And the crying laughing emoji.
Mm-hmm.
And then @JDrill said, Jackie went from, I don't know if I should talk about this, to, I'm not done with this topic real quick. Laughing my ass off. Laughing, crying emoji. Love this episode. Spill that tea on those emotionally draining friendships.
Yes.
Yay. Glad we could do that service.
Got a lot to
and
say
then,
about that shit.
@PaulinaRodriguez basically added you and said, dragging the Leos. We still love you, though. Serious note, listening is the highlight of my week.
Cute.
Thank you. And oh girl, @OhGirl. Is she related to you, Greta Girl?
What? Oh, is she related? I don't know. Oh, girl. @OhGirl said to get a girl.
My mom and sister are Leo moons. It was loud growing up.
That's sad.
That's very true.
That's unfortunate. I'm sorry.
Anyway, I just wanted to shout them out because I think they all like felt the Leo moon drag very, very close to home, literally.
Yeah.
Me too, girl. I live with a Leo moon and I can't take it sometimes.
Yeah.
Very, very dramatic. So, this week, what are we talking about?
You know, we're talking about a really important topic.
Mm-hmm.
We decided to move away from our hoetry.
For a minute.
For a minute. It's still a part of us.
We are multifaceted.
Right.
Complex
individuals. We have intersectional identities.
Yes.
But the first two letters of this word actually start with ho.
You know, that's not a coincidence.
All right.
So much for leaving the ho trivia.
It was too easy.
I know.
Too easy. No, but we're going to be...
I get it.
I didn't even try that time.
I know. That's what she said too. Go ahead.
Okay. We're going to be talking about home. If we can gather ourselves.
If we can actually get to it.
Right, because this is a serious topic.
Yeah, I feel like we're laughing in nervous anticipation. Home. That's a heavy one, friend.
But every person of color / immigrant.
I know. Trigger warning.
Yeah, trigger warning.
We're going to talk about something that all of us can't attain in this lifetime.
Drop the mic now. It's over.
Done. Podcast over. Pick me up off the floor.
No, there's hope.
Yeah, yes. So.
But we're not there yet.
there's something really beautiful about not having it together when it comes to home too.
Yeah.
I think that, like, that's where I want to start. Like, what does home mean? I think home has changed so much in its definition for me.
Yeah. I mean, this is just a, like, I think people of color, women of color have been mm-hmm. asking themselves for decades, right? Like,
yes.
I mean, I was just thinking about, like, this bridge called my back. And, like, I know, I mean, obviously, we are always have Ansaldúa on our mind, who also talks about this. And, like, many, many other women of color who have always asked these questions in their work, right? And mm-hmm. on a daily basis, I think, in terms of what is home? What is home? Where is home? And this constant search for home. And for so many people who are displaced for various reasons, either because of migration or
borders
or their borders or their sexuality or their gender. Like, you know, home is a hard place, or even, you know, just not seeing eye to eye with people, or
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a heavy thing.
I think it's also, like, maybe sometimes easy to think of home as a physical place, like a geographic place.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was little, I obviously thought, oh, where I live is home, right? And that's pretty much the end of it. And I think as I've gotten older, it's been really cool to find out that, like, home can be a fluid thing, you know, that mm-hmm. it feels good sometimes, it doesn't at times, and that it can be violent too. That home doesn't have to be with maybe our biological family. I think that's another one. Like, just all these things that are coming up, right? At least, I don't know, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, like, how has your definition of home changed over time, and how have you seen it? Like, what are the major shifts that you've noticed on the definition? If they happened, if not, that's cool too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I hadn't really, I mean, I've always thought about it, but I feel like I've also not really put it into, articulated it.
Mm.
But I think for me, home has been interesting, like, because home is often associated with family, and I think I've always more so associated to family because, like, being really close with my siblings and my mom. Mm-hmm. Right, and growing up in this kind of tumultuous environment where we moved every few years, or we never had stable housing, whether it was because my mom couldn't afford it, or we were getting kicked out of places, or we had to live with my grandma multiple times during my childhood. So I think we moved, like, I mean, my mom migrated. Mm. Right. Like, my mom migrated when she was like 16, and so did my dad. And so, like, from Mexico. And so they made LA home, quote unquote. Right. And then growing up with my mom and my brothers, we grew up all around, like, LA, like Koreatown, Hollywood, and then finally moved to Santa Monica when I was in high school. But in between that, we moved, like, a lot of times, right? Mm. Like, we moved so much, again, just because, you know, because of poverty, for whatever reasons.
Like, all around LA, you mean?
We moved all around LA. We moved from apartment to apartment. Like, we would get evicted because either my brother was doing crazy shit and, like, getting my mom kicked out, or, like, we just couldn't make ends meet and stuff like that. So, like, home, I didn't really feel like I ever had a home, especially because we were struggling so much. Like, that concept really didn't resonate with me.
Right. It was like a foreign thing.
It was totally a foreign thing.
Also, like, media sets these really high expectations for what it's supposed to look like.
Right.
Which fucks everybody up because everyone feels cheated.
Yeah. When you've only lived in an apartment in a really small space and, like, have shared, like, a bed with either a sibling or a parent, like,
your whole life,
like, you're really made to feel like you don't have a home.
Right.
So, you know, I think, like,
Or when my favorite thing to say, you don't have a daddy.
Right. I don't have a dad. I didn't have a daddy who could buy me a home.
Same.
Or even rent a home. That would have been helpful. No daddy. Ain't no daddy. So, yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, we grew up in like a one bedroom apartment for so many years between the three of us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the four of us. The three children and then like my mom, right? Like in a one bedroom apartment for like years.
That's rough.
It wasn't until like I got to middle school that we had our first two bedroom apartment. And that was a shit show because like it was a shitty, like that apartment should have, like we should have sued the landlord, but obviously
didn't
no. have the means yeah. or the knowledge to, because there was like mold everywhere and the bathroom ceiling was like falling apart, and it was just like fucked up living conditions, like straight up, you know. So I think for me, home was definitely a foreign concept.
Yeah,
like I didn't have that, and I think it has changed in so many ways, because I think the first, like, yes, we think about it like what you were saying, we always think about home as this physical thing, as this thing that like like society or media portray as this like big house with a white picket fence, with like, you know, this two parent household and like children and this kind of notion of like this perfect family, right? Living in it. And that was never my experience. And so, you know, when I went off to college, I think that was my first time, like, I'll never forget, like, my senior year of college, me and my housemates, we all, we were, so up to that point, I'd always lived in an apartment.
Right.
And then my senior year, we rented a house. And I had my own bedroom.
Oh, my.
And that was the first time I had my own bedroom, like, in my life.
So I think it took me also a long time to have my own bedroom, because I shared a bedroom with my sister for forever.
Right, I can imagine it's easier in that way. And that was my first time I was in a home, and I was just like, wow.
Didn't know what to do with yourself.
There was so much space.
Yeah.
There was so much space.
I totally relate.
Yeah. Oh my God. Space. I was like, what is this?
What do I do?
I think the way, like, now, you know, I'll fast forward a lot, but
gross.
I think home is still an interesting concept for me, because you know, I think for me, what I'm trying to understand and like trying to again, it's for me, it's like this notion of family and home.
Yes.
And what does home even mean for me? Because I know very clearly what family means, but I still don't know what really home means. But I think something you said actually to me a few episodes ago really stuck with me, and it made so much sense, because I think it just clicked with something that I'd always been processing or whatever. But when you were, I think you were reading like the Cancer Moon episode.
So reading you?
When you were reading me and dragging me.
Yeah.
And sorry. I was probably dragging myself and others along with me. you said for Cancer Moons, it's really about like you carry home on your back, right? And I knew that about cancers, and I knew that. I mean, Ansel Gua says that, right? Yes. You carry home with you wherever you go. And I've heard that. I've heard that from other Chicana feminists. Like, I've heard that before. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of like, okay, whatever. I guess for me, it was like, oh, you carry your cultura and like,
right, you carry knowledge with you. That's
right. And I was like, okay, cool, whatever. But when you said it, I think because I've been going through this, a lot of this body stuff, right, that I've talked about in the podcast, and that I've been like going through personally, and maybe not have talked about that much on the podcast.
Yeah.
But when you said that and you pointed it out, I was just like, yeah, like so much of home is this body that I'm in.
Yeah.
And being in rhythm and in harmony with this body that I often am not in. So I think Because I feel for me, I think I mentioned it on the last episode, but I think for me, a lot of my life I've been at war with myself inside my body because I was trying to meet...
Louder for the people in the back.
I was literally at war with my own body because I couldn't meet certain ideals of like femininity or womanhood and like trying to meet those things and trying to perform those things and not being this enough, that enough, right? Like I'm sure people who are listening, you know what I'm talking about. And so I think that for so many years, and I talked about this in the Pancita Diaries too, right? Like the things that I've done to my body, mm-hmm. and like the drugs that I've done, the alcoholism, the all the abuse of food too, right? Like the dieting and the extreme one end to another, and they're just hating my body because of how I look or how I don't look, right? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, like, it's now I'm really understanding is like, this is home. This is what I carry around with me, and this is what I need to be at peace with.
Yes.
You know, and this is what will always be with me, at least in this lifetime.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so this is where I take, what I take, and now I understand it. It's not just those other things like language and knowledge and culture and like practices and traditions, right? But it really is like
the literal physical body.
The literal physical body that you're in, and like really, I don't know, coming to terms with that and like
accepting
it.
And surrender.
Eso, really accepting it and like and just being in love with it. Which has also been a foreign concept, and like this notion of home and love and like,
how's your Ho'oponopono going?
My Ho'oponopono. It's going. It's been really helpful. I feel like I've been there's been shifting that's happening, and I do feel better. I'm feeling better in my body, but it's a process, and like I think understanding it as my place of home and what that means, like for me, is something that is going to continue to be a process. But now that I see that, it's kind of like, okay, like that also impacts family and like conversations that need to be had and like, you know, stuff like that. So it's just interesting when you take, I think for so long, I've seen home as this outside exterior thing, but home is really this personal interior thing within.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, you can be, and we think about this maybe sometimes, like people who live in beautiful homes but hate themselves. Yeah. Like, what people good with is
all
it?
That shmoney.
Right. Like, if you bought yourself all the favorite things list, but then you're not happy with yourself. Mm-hmm. That's not going to fix shit. You know, we talked about this in the self-care episode too. Like, you really need to be good with yourself and do that work. And I totally forgot about saying that. Honestly, like the home is on your back. And that's like something that Chicana feminist Shereen Moraga thinks of it too. Just thinking through it, like, really shocked me when I first learned it. Because I don't have the best family relationships. Family's always been a battleground for me too.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't move. We made one big move. We crossed the border. Yeah, we crossed the border once. And that, I think after that, we didn't really move ever, which I think it was good. I think it provided some stability for me, so it wasn't a bad thing. But it was like, even before the move, I remember home being very volatile. You know, I've shared before on the podcast that my father was and maybe still is a drug addict. We're not really sure if he's still using. And that was really difficult to grow up with, right? Like, I got to witness domestic violence firsthand against my mother when my father was on a binge, and it was just really difficult. He would steal, we laugh about it now, right? Because I think the after is medicine.
Right.
But, like, he would steal my mom's diaper money to go on a bender. And I didn't have diapers, and so I was just cheating myself, probably. So, like, I didn't even have that stability as a baby, right? And that really marks you. Like, I laugh about it now, but I'm like, damn, like, I was struggling even before I knew that struggling was a thing. You know? Like, I was really out here. I was out here shitting myself, you know? And I think that my mom blames herself sometimes, and I want her to. Because I know she listens, so I love her, and I love what she did when she could do. I think it was enough, always enough. But, like, home was Mexico for a long time for me.
Right.
And I fucking loved it. I loved my childhood. I had a very unsupervised, very dangerous
childhood. Sounds like Mexico.
Yeah. Yo, I have a scar in my hand that never went away from barbed wire that I walked into because I was playing hide and seek with my grandpa.
Okay.
So, like, this scar right here, I got it from walking into a roll of barbed wire. And my mom's reaction was like, well, did you win?
Okay.
The hide and seek game. No, she was worried, but she was also like, what did you win? Because
people in the States are hypochondriacs.
Yes, yeah. They don't let their kids get any near any bacteria, whereas my mom was like, you need to catch some bacteria so that we can get you strong.
Right.
Drink the water, eat the food. So that's why I have a stomach of steel, I think.
Yes, I was born here, so not my case.
Yeah, so I think as an immigrant, you know, home changed drastically for me. And I think that, like, I had a pretty, even though things were shitty, even though I went through a lot of really horrible situations growing up, for me, home was like my extended family. I have a very large family. I don't think a lot of folks know this. My mom is number 12 out of 20.
Right, yes.
I have hundreds. I think about 100 cousins now.
Hundreds of Becerras?
No, Garcias. Oh, so Becerra is my dad's side. No worries. Okay. I don't know how many Becerras there are, but definitely not more than my mom's side.
Okay. Well, there are a lot of Garcias in the world.
Yes.
I guess all of them came from your grandma.
I would say about half. Half of them were in Jalisco and were related. So I went from this really beautiful home base, right, with extended family, with a tia down the street, with tias taking care of me. And I think I was speaking on this yesterday because it was Dia de los Muertos, or Muertux. I don't know how to say it.
Muertexes.
And so I was thinking about my muertitos, you know, my ancestors.
Yeah.
And feeling really sad, just like every year is like this. I get so sad because I'm so far away from their graves. I'm physically far away from them, so it doesn't feel, I don't feel like I should, I don't know if this makes sense, but I don't feel like I should be here. Like, I almost feel like I need to go there, you know, for Day of the Dead specifically. So yeah, home was always shitty to me. I mean, I didn't really understand the move to the U.S. at first. I was 10 years old. I just knew that my mom married somebody else and, you know, they lived over here. And that was, like, my understanding of it was that we were just going to live here now.
Right.
And so that was really shitty. Like, home moves under your feet a lot of the times.
Yeah.
You know, the second shift for me that I really want to get your opinion on, though.
Okay.
Is when, because this is something that I did. So after I got over the U.S. move, which was drastic, I started to make home out of people. So it's not like I got any better.
I think we all do that. Yes.
So I went from shitting myself.
Yeah. I had a very abbreviated, you know, journey. So there's definitely homes in between the 12,000 homes I lived as a child and then my body. So.
Yeah, so the first time you talked about college, I lived at home during college, actually. So I didn't get to experience my own room, maybe until like high school, but it was still with my parents. But the first time that I lived kind of like without my parents was with somebody else. I moved in with my partner at the time when I started my PhD program. And that was the first time I lived with somebody else, somebody I was dating in general. And that fell apart for many reasons, but I think one of the main reasons was that I had no idea how to live with somebody. I had no idea how to make a home.
Right.
And right. So I started to like...
Because when you don't have a home...
Yeah, like when, there's no fucking blueprint, dude. There's no instructions. So I remember that just being a really... I remember the U-Haul episode.
Right.
We talked about U-Hauling.
I just thought about that one too, yeah.
And like part of my botched U-Haul experience was like not knowing what home was supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom was a single mom for a long time. So like the chores fell on me and my sister, for example. And as a woman of color, I often did the cleaning in my house, but it didn't feel unequitable or like unequal because it was all women in my household, right? My stepdad was the only man. He was outnumbered, which is a good thing. And so when I lived with a partner, it was so hard to delegate chores and to make the home look good because it was like so foreign to me as a concept to communicate about that stuff. So like just thinking through how I put so much of myself into this person thinking that they were going to be home, you know, and like that makes you codependent.
Yes.
That almost makes it's not fair to the other person also to place such expectations on them. And it just that's just my reflections on that. Like, you know, what happens when we make people home is that they can leave and then you're going to fall apart because the foundations are not in your own self. The foundations are walking away. You know, and what are you left
with? That's hard because I relate because I've also made people home.
Yeah.
Or tried to make people home.
I'm not trying to shame anyone who does that.
No.
Sharing, but yeah.
I mean, I think too, because, I mean, it's hard. So yes, I understand and I agree because I've totally done that. I did that in my last relationship. Like, was trying to make a home building with no foundation. And it was like I was accumulating things because I was like, oh, we're building this home together. We're building this, you know, this family, this we're settling down now. Okay. And I was like, you know, really obsessed with like making our home look great. But our relationship was actually in shambles.
Right.
But I couldn't see that because my coping was trying to make everything look better on the outside. And I think we were both doing that, trying to like make our home look good, make our relationship look good, but there was like nothing there, you know?
Yeah.
So that's really hard when you, again, like, I guess in my experience, like, when you're not I think that's why that makes even more sense. When you're not making yourself home,
yeah,
it's really hard to build any home.
Right.
And I think, I mean, and we were talking, I don't know if I'm diverting a little bit, but because before we started recording, we were talking about migration and that being like a topic that we want to talk about. And I think when, you know, I didn't personally migrate and I know you did, but when we think about home as someone who migrates and as somebody more particularly is like undocumented and what that looks like in terms of like, because like we can, a literal definition of home is like a place where you live, but it's also associated with a place where you live and you're loved and accepted, right?
Yes.
So if we think about that on a broader scale and thinking about that conflict, right, as again, as even a being a person of color, and I think this is why so many like women of color or Chicana feminists also even have this conversation of like not feeling like they belong.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I know that's something we've heard a lot about even in the undocumented movement, right? Like people claiming this space, people saying this is their home or they were brought here and like, this is now their home. And that, I mean, you kind of talked about it, right? And like that Mexico was home and how we think about home as being so associated, not to either, even like how particular physical buildings, right? But also to particular like countries,
nations,
not even just cities, right? But nation and what that means. And also like even some of us who were born here, like not associating with like this being home.
Like that Mariah Carey, I don't know her meme.
Yeah,
comes to mind.
Yeah, right. Totally. Like, so I don't know. It's, I was just thinking like there's so many ways
Yeah.
To think about home and how sometimes thinking about home can be a really complicated and conflicting topic.
Yeah.
Because of all the things that are tied to it.
I remember, this makes me think about a James Baldwin quote that I'm probably going to butcher. But the gist of it is like, I love America, so I have the right, I deserve the right to criticize her consistently or constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that because I think that's, at least for me, my current relationship to this nation, which I don't identify with, and even Mexico to a certain extent, not anymore. Mm. I think the distance from Mexico, although not that much, I'm in LA, has allowed me, again, my political consciousness coming of age happened here.
Yeah.
You know, even though I was raised in the Mexican school system and like was fed the nationalist food of the school system there to be proud of the revolution and all that, right? I still very much like came into my own self politically here. And so I think it's cool to be critical of where you live. I don't think that you should quite identify so much with something that you can't see it. And how it affects people on, I guess, a larger scale.
Yeah.
So something that I really appreciate about that big move that I had, right, my immigrating here, was distance, you know, and perspective. And honestly, like, both countries are fucked up. Both countries are doing horrible things to their citizens. And both countries are not home.
You know? Both countries.
And I remember speaking to, I mentioned many times that I was a Palestinian solidarity activist. I'm still very much in solidarity, just not actively working with folks on it at the moment. And one of the things that we all really like spoke about was home, right? Because Palestinians are exiled from home. Currently, their home is under military occupation by another country. And so going home is complicated. It's almost impossible. It comes with consequences. And so it made me think a lot about like the fear of going home, the inability to go home. So what do you do when you can't go home?
Right.
You know, like you make home wherever you are. And that's kind of where I was going.
So many people are like displaced from like in all.
Yeah.
Not just Mexico, but Central America and like
exactly
South America, right? Like the displacement that happens is so real. So I think like, yeah, what you're saying is just like, what do you do when you can't go back home? And home is this place of like trauma for whatever reasons,
or violence,
be they political, be they state sanctioned, be they whatever, because your mom,
like, yeah,
you know, whatever they may be. But like, home is this scary, much broader, much more encompassing, like, idea, right?
Yeah, and I mentioned on the live that we had before the show on Instagram that I'm okay with, I mentioned I was okay with having, not having my shit together and kind of honoring that process. But I think another big key for me is to be okay with home not being attainable, you know, like to kind of be okay with making home wherever I go and not stress out if it doesn't look perfect or if it doesn't feel like what it looks out on the media. I think something that I really remember, you know, in building with Palestinians specifically, because that's my lived experience, is that we would all just try to make the moment home. You know, if we're hanging out and we're making some dinner, we try to remember home through the food. We try to honor our home by fighting for it, like by actually actively participating in the struggle to get home back.
Right.
Or to make things a little bit better for the people after us. Right. Like, I think it's all about that. Like, if you're going to make this world a better place, as cheesy as that sounds, you got to fight for home.
Yep.
So that your children feel more at home here.
Right.
You know, you want it to affect the next generation. And so that's kind of like my current state of mind on that, is that I'm not tripping about being really, sometimes I trip about being really far away from my extended family. Dia de los Muertos is one of those days where I'm really emo and sensitive about it, because I can't be there with them to celebrate this beautiful day. But then, you know, se me pasa. And then I focus on where I am physically here, right, and making home out of this body too, and loving my body and like making sure that I feel good, you know, and yeah, that I build here, because bitch, this is where you are. Like, being realistic about
whether they want you here or not.
Yes. I don't give a fuck, you know? Like, I know that we're called, I don't even know what Donald Trump is calling us these days, but I don't give a fuck. I'm going to keep fighting. And I know you are too. And we're going to keep on being our amazing, not fitting in selves. And it's going to look great.
Wonderful unicorn.
Yes.
I was at lunch today at the Trans Latina Coalition. And I was just so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting at a table just surrounded by beautiful trans women. It was like my favorite. I just want to plug that they have their annual fashion show fundraiser, Garras, next Saturday, which I was recruited to volunteer for. Today when I went. They're like, what are you doing on Saturday? And I was like, I'm going to Garras. And they're like, okay, we need you to work. Anyway. Yes. But this beautiful black trans woman was, just, I mean, she was talking about something else, right? Not Garras, but I just wanted to plug that. Please, that's one organization that I donate, not just my time, but also money to.
Yes.
Because I very much believe in what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so this woman was saying, I don't know what the fuck she was talking about. I can't remember right now. But she was just like talking about, oh, you know, all us aliens here. And I was like, that's so funny. Like that she would use, I mean, because usually when we use that word, it's like not
nice.
It's not a nice word.
It's a derogatory term.
It's a derogatory term. But, you know, she's using it to talk about her uniqueness and their uniqueness, right? And it could be hella triggering. And we've always, I mean, we've heard only in bad context that word.
Right.
But I was just like, that's like, you know, we're all unicorns here. Whatever, however you want to call yourself, right?
Right. And calling out the state's language as ridiculous.
Right.
And, like, flipping it and just, like, using it.
Flipping it and reversing it.
And being like, yeah, I guess we're aliens and some shit. Like, right. That really, I love that.
So, yeah, but I think home is interesting. I want to bring up, because I think we were talking about this before we recorded, so I want to make sure we talk about it now. And I know we might have even referenced it in a different episode, probably like the first one or the earlier ones, but we can't not talk about home without talking about Antaldúa.
Oh, yeah.
And talking about that part in Borderlands where she's talking about her student who asked about, she was like confused, and she asked if homophobia was a fear of going home.
Wow. That hit me heavy.
Yes. Yes, bitch. Yes.
I had to take off my headphones because you laugh too loud.
Sorry.
I love it though. No, do you. I'm trying to adjust over here.
Okay.
Yes.
But yeah, right. So it's there's so many layers to it, especially if you're a queer, you know, if you're one of us.
I was telling Jackie that it's basically people who fear others who are so authentically home in themselves have homophobia. So like homophobia is the fear and almost like being...
Look at you theorizing, bitch.
I try. So like, think about it. Like people who are offended, right, quote unquote, or not okay with queerness are really not okay with people being fully authentically themselves.
At home in their body.
At home in their body. Like these people are totally out there,
right,
shining, not giving a care in the world about what they think. And somehow these people feel entitled to, you know, crash on that. Like,
right.
It doesn't matter. Like, though, the people that I think experience homophobia are oftentimes afraid of themselves.
Yep.
And maybe they're like also sensing that they're not being fully authentic with themselves. And so they lash it out on people who are, you know. Yeah. That's a fear of going home to yourself.
Right, yeah. No, totally. So,
I love Ansa Lua pointing that out. I think that's such a deep...
Yeah, because a lot of us fucking unicorns go through that.
Yeah.
Whether it's because of our sexuality or just fucking overall queerness.
Academia, going to college, like grad school made me feel like a fucking alien in my family. You know, not anymore. But in the beginning, it was hard. And I felt like a really weird... And then even in... You know, grad school where you're the first gen student and you don't know shit, like you feel like an outsider. And I think when you become completely okay with yourself, people can sense that. And some of them will react positively and love you and appreciate you. And some of them will just be afraid.
So if you take anything from this segment, it's be... I wasn't gonna say anything sassy, bitch.
No,
she's giving me a look.
I'm just like, don't fuck this up. I was following you.
No, I was just gonna say, if you take anything, or at least what I'm taking from this conversation, is just like, it's so important to be at home in your own body and that authenticity, that even if the world tries to bring you down, whether it's 45, whether it's your mom and dad, whether it's
your own fucking inner voice telling you you're not enough.
That's mine.
Me too.
So, regardless of what it is, just own that shit. Own who you are. Own who you're becoming.
Yes.
Own who you aren't yet but want to be.
Yes.
Own that shit and make that home and work on building that and developing the foundation for that.
Yes.
Okay, we're done now.
De corazón a corazón contigo y que Dios me los bendiga a todos, hoy, mañana y siempre. Y que reciban de mí siempre paz, mucha paz, pero sobre todo mucho, mucho, mucho amor.
And now it's time for... Let me clear my throat. The Walter Mercado Corner.
Doop, doop, doop.
Who let the dogs out? I was trying to do a seal noise.
Oh, wow. That's not what I heard.
Okay, which moon sign are you dragging today?
I'm actually dragging the moon sign that we are currently entering a full moon.
Oh, in. Right.
And I also wanted to use this space to shout out one of... I was getting asked earlier where I read horoscopes from, and I just want to give Chani... We've talked about her before, but just if you need to be reminded that she is amazing, it's...
She's a Chani, bad bitch.
Chani Nicholas or Nicolas. I used to say
Nicholas.
It's Nicholas, but I just say Nicolas because it rolls off my tongue, okay? Spanish is my first language. But yeah, she's a beautiful astrologer, now based in LA. She used to be based in New York, I think. And her horoscopes give me life every week, friend. Like, I read her shit all the time.
Mm-hmm. And I read her too.
It hits me so deep.
All of our friends read her, huh?
Yes. Like, we all kind of like share constantly what we...
how she drags us.
Yes. Definitely. And this, you know, this week is no different. So this week, there's actually a full moon in Taurus, which is a sign that we're reading today. But I just wanted to share a couple of thoughts about what does it mean when there's a full moon in something. I know a lot of you may be looking at articles about it, or friends might be posting, but you're still kind of clueless. So a full moon is sort of the culmination of a cycle. If you're familiar with the moon cycle, I'm very familiar with it. I'm a Cancer sun. And I also, you know, bleed every month, so it...
Okay.
The moon cycle is very, very much a thing I know. And I keep up with it.
All right.
So the moon in Taurus is almost like the next month is going to be colored by the energy of that sign. So just as a reminder, Taurus is very slow, steady, hard worker, loves to be comfortable, loves to be wrapped in luxury and things that are well made. Mm-hmm. They appreciate craftsmanship. They really like, they go for quality, not quantity, is what I'm saying. And that's kind of the vibe that we're going for this next month. So I wanted to shout them out. I think, you know, I don't show them enough love. I've had some interesting relationships with them.
Let's tell the listeners why.
Well, I have a sibling whom I had a falling out with about 4 or 5 years ago, who's a Taurus, and it's a difficult sore topic for me. So that doesn't stop me from appreciating the Taurus nature itself. I think Taurus and Cancer are very compatible, actually. Just not my sibling and I, which is cool. So... A full moon in Taurus. I just want to read a little bit of what Chani wrote this week. And we recently heard that her work was stolen, right?
Yes, yes. She was posting about how somebody straight up copy and pasted everything she wrote. And she, like, writes this stuff all on her own, you know? Like, I'm sure mm-hmm. she... I don't know her personally, right? But I do read her stuff all the time. And so that's a lot of work. Yeah, and, you know, she does... She does the horoscopes every week. She does a weekly update on, like, a weekly horoscope forecast. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she puts a lot of effort, time, energy, intellectual thought into what she does. And, you know, somebody just straight up copy and pasted her shit and didn't even tag her or acknowledge her or change any of it.
That's awesome.
Straight up plagiarized her shit.
Fuck. I know what that feels like.
She was upset about it, so...
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Okay. I really want her to, you know, get her credit where credit is due. So
yeah.
We're going to read a little bit from her Full Moon in Taurus blog post that she released a couple days ago. And it's about Taurus, so I'm just going to start. The ego is constantly trying to convince us that we are in control. That we are in this alone, that we are at the center of all things. But this full moon asks us to remember to share our problems so that others can share their solutions. Who or what holds your problems with you? What great force of creativity, generosity, and spirit can you call on when life gets overwhelming? How can you remind yourself that you are not in this alone? That solutions are constantly seeking you through others. Through meditation, through movement, prayer, the power of nature. The world's pain is too much to hold on our own. And this last part just, you know, make me so shook. We cannot hold the world on our own, but we can hold one tiny and incredibly significant part of its becoming. Mm. The full moon asks us to slow down enough to reconnect with that truth. So, as you probably already know, if you're a Taurus... things come slow to you. You appreciate the process. You appreciate working really hard to earn something, right? Everything that a Taurus does is earned.
Mm.
Very much like an earth sign. Mm-hmm. They appreciate the struggle, the working struggle, right? Like, they toil and they work hard every day to make sure that the ending product is impeccable, you know, and beautiful. They will always have that Venus influence. So the moon in Taurus, right, that means that that's who you are in private. That's who you, your desires, your innermost desires are that of a Taurus, which means that, news alert, you crave security, and more security. If you're a Taurus moon, you're probably looking for somebody to give you stability, or you're just looking for stability itself. This is the sugar baby sign.
That's me. Yeah. I'm a sugar baby. Well, I mean, I'm not a Taurus moon, but that's my word.
Well, you're an earth sign.
Yes.
You appreciate the value of money.
I tell Anisha I'm her sugar baby.
Isn't Anisha a Virgo moon?
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
She's my sugar mama. I'm a sugar baby.
That's horrible.
Shh.
Okay. So
don't share with anybody.
I won't. You're only seeing it to like 2,000 people.
All right.
So a Taurus moon is all about craving that security, craving stability from people, from their surroundings, from their job. They're going to be the people that toil at that really maybe tough job because they understand that that job gives them the income that they need to be stable, right? Mm-hmm. They're not the kind of person that will do what the guy who walked out of Twitter did. the one who terminated 45's account. They would never make a move like that at work. They're just very safe, right? Mm. They value, they're self-preserving, they value their security, and they understand that like things need to be stable for them to be good, and so they don't want to fuck with any of that, right? They don't fuck with work in that way, and so sometimes that may make them seem like a little passive, right? Maybe conforming. And I think that's like the low potential, right? So the low potential Taurus moon can be very passive in their relationships, can sometimes not really get out of things that are not good anymore. They just kind of stay because they don't know anything else that gives them stability.
Right.
So it's like they just do it because it's good and they don't want to fuck with a good thing. You know what I mean?
That sounds not good.
No. So the upside of that is that a Taurus moon that's high potential, which is obviously what we all want you to aspire. Yeah. Especially because if you're a Taurus already or if you have Taurus moon, this full moon that's coming is really important for you. It's asking questions of you that are right in line with the theme of your entire life. And so it's really important to pay attention to the full moon in Taurus, especially if you're a Taurus, because it's forcing you to understand that you can't carry all the burden alone. A lot of the times Taurus suffers in silence. They suffer by themselves. They work so hard and look straight ahead and they have tunnel vision, but sometimes they don't let others take the burden off of their back, you know? And that's what Chani was saying this week, which really resonates, is that for Taurus, they're used to not getting any help, you know? They don't even know how to ask for help. And so if you're a moon sign, again, this is more like people that your like your partner might see that Taurus come out, your family. So they probably know you as somebody who just kind of works and keeps quiet and puts their head down, you know, depending on your sun sign. If your sun sign's a fire sign that's really out there, they may see you work hard and play hard, right? But at the same time, it doesn't deal or process the issues that I'm pointing out, which is that you need to really take a step back. And this is something I told Taurus sons, which is, are you happy? You know?
Right.
Just to throw it back. It also applies to the moon signs, you know. A lot of them end up in relationships where it's almost like perfect on paper.
Yeah.
But not perfect in real life.
Right.
Or they put up with behavior and they put up with the treatment that's subpar because it provides them security and stability.
Mm-hmm.
So Taurus moon, unfortunately, can get itself into abusive situations. Situations that are just not good or conducive to their emotional health.
Right.
But that are good for them financially. Right. I think that's like... you know.
There's a pattern with Taurus.
Yeah. And you know what? Like... The one thing I'll say is that what I love about Taurus is that it can provide for itself. You know, it knows how, it has resourcefulness.
Right.
It definitely knows how to get their shit, you know, in order. But I feel like sometimes it comes in the at the price of their own emotional well-being. And that's a high price to pay. That's the price that nobody should pay for, for comfortableness, right? For comfort. So yeah, other things I wanted to mention is that Tauruses have two speeds. relaxed and contented. So this is like the high potential where you have everything you need. You have your cozy blanket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your rent is paid. You're drinking your wine. You know, you're at home most likely. You're like a Cancer. And you feel good. You know, everything's taken care of. That's the first speed. The second speed... is hyped up and ready to charge. It's almost like a bull. So like when you're angry, you're angry. Don't ever get a Taurus angry or you'll have what happened to me.
Yes.
You'll have a falling out and not talk to them for years. Because really when a Taurus is done with you, they're done.
Right.
You know, they hold grudges very much for a very long time. So it's hard to shift their mind and their consciousness. Earth signs move slow. They don't change their mind like a Gemini, you know?
Right.
Earth signs really need to come to their own process and conclusion before they even, like, change their mind. So if you're a Taurus moon, I hope that you take the next month to reflect on what is it that you need help with, you know? What is it that you can ask someone for help? Like, just try it. If you're a Taurus moon, or if you know a Taurus moon in your life, Taurus sun, like, try asking them what they need this month, right? Like, be a supportive friend, partner, and be like, hey, like, what can I help you with? What are you carrying that I can help you with? That's super important. And also, all of us need to channel this Taurus energy and take care of ourselves. Like,
right.
If it's one thing that I love about Taurus is that self-care is a priority to them. They will not compromise self-care. They will make themselves feel good. They'll self-preserve. So do that. This next month is all about that for you. Whoever you are, right? You don't have to have Taurus in the sun or moon. So I want you to channel that treat yourself energy this next
treat
month.
Yourself.
Yeah, that's all I have to say, but please let us know if any of this resonates with you.
Yeah.
This week. I would love to hear from some Taurus moons and suns.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope you have a lovely weekend or week.
That's all.
That's all.
We're done. I'm hungry now.
I don't Bye, have to be nice everybody. Anymore.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all. Love you.
Have a good week, I guess.
You guess.